Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Welcome to Signs of Life Radio. I'm glad to speak with you all this evening. We're your hosts, Bob and Fran Ginsberg. ForeverFamilyFoundation.org is our website. Our phone number to reach us is 1-877-230-3062.
During the show.
If you want to instant message us, if you have AIMS, Signs of Life Radio. You can send us emails at SOL at foreverfamilyfoundation.org, or you can you want to write to something regarding the newsletter that just went out. You should be receiving it now. You could write to us at Robert at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I think you have it reversed. I think if they want to write to us about the radio show, it would be radio.
Radio? Okay, well,
yes, forever. We have so many, but you wanted to go to the right person because if they need it, if they're writing, they want an answer.
Yeah, well, we're reading them all, so you just get to us. But if it's regarding the radio show, I'm getting faces here from Fran, so go to radio at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Even if you have some guests that you'd like to suggest or comments about the show, we'd love to hear from you. Tonight's show is sponsored by Comlock. KAMLAK.com. You can visit their website. They are a wonderful organization. And we're going to have an interesting show tonight. We're going to have Dan Sturgis as our guest. He is a paranormal investigator, among many other things. So if you'd like to call in, you have a question about ghosts or hauntings or some question that you would like some clarification on, give us a call, 1-877-230-3062. Raffles in full swing, we have about 3 weeks left.
You got to be in it to win it. And the Holiday of the Earth raffle, you can win 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 medium readings. In the past, there have been people who have won multiple times in one raffle. Those mediums that have offered readings are Joanne Gerber, Janet Mayer, Deborah Martin, Bobby Allison, and Angelina Diana, all Forever Family Foundation certified mediums. And it's only $5 a chance, and you're in it until all 5 prizes have been awarded. And you got to hurry up because the drawing is April 22nd, Earth Day. And that's our raffle. I have 2 more announcements because we've just popped up 2 more events up onto the website. Teresa Caputo, who is a fabulous medium located on Long Island, is going to do visitation rites on Friday, June 19th from 7:30 to 10 p.m. in Oceanside, New York. And that's a workshop. It runs from 7:30 to 10. It's a workshop where she will be bringing through spirit communication for the entire evening and showing you how to be open to visitations. And then on August 21st, also a Friday, from 7 to 10 p.m., is a very special workshop for parents who have lost children and also the adult siblings of lost children. It's called How to Listen When Your Children Speak. It's being done by Lynn LeClaire. And that, too, is at our Oceanside, New York conference room. And Lynn is also a fabulous Forever Family Foundation certified medium from Long Island. So you can go to the website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, to reserve your seats. These are limited seats. There's only going to be 20. Well, it's for 10 children in spirit. So the parents of those 10 children, or you could call 631-425-7707. And those are my announcements.
Okay, and we are still planning workshop slash conference, I'd say, with the emphasis is going to be on grief and mediums and ways of keeping in touch with loved ones. So stay tuned for that. That'll be in November. You know, Fran and I haven't been to the movies. I can't remember when, but we just actually went to see a film called Knowing that just came out. And we enjoyed it, but the reason I thought it was interesting is there are quite a number of things that are going on in the movie without giving away the movie that things that we talk about.
Well, I think that we were drawn to even just check it out by the title.
Yeah.
The title itself is one that's used a lot in the spiritual realm, and it infers that we're born with some knowledge, inner knowledge of what the real universe is like beyond the physicality of the world that we live in. And so having taken a peek at the trailer, which I think people should do and decide for themselves that they want to go see this movie, but when you look at the trailer, you say, wow, this really is up our alley. This is really what we're talking about.
Yeah. And it has elements telepathic communication in it. It has talks about, you know, an afterlife. So many of the things that we're interested in, everybody will come away with something different than their own explanations, but that's the point, you know.
Yeah.
Simulate some thought. What did strike me is that, and we were talking about it before, we were sitting there, we got there early, we were watching all the previews, and I know I noticed that if they showed 10 previews, and at least half of them, if not more, were concerning, you know, ghosts and
some aspect of a non-physical world.
It's, yeah. You know, the unfortunate part of it is almost all of them played on this element of fear.
Well, that's Hollywood, and
yeah.
You need to sell Hollywood, and that draws in younger people who really don't appreciate the movie for what it is.
Yeah. Well, some of them are truly just commercial movies that are out to scare you.
Yeah, I mean, if I saw one more Friday the 13th movie, it's advertised. They don't go to them.
Yeah. You know, there are some that discuss, you know, the so-called paranormal realm in some sort of even-handed, you know, fashion. But I just wish, even though obviously there's great interest just by the number of TV shows and movies that are out there. And, you know, the ghost hunting shows that are on TV and so forth. But I don't know, you know, what the fascination is. You know, people look at it because I think part of it is that they want to be fearful and they want to be scared. Evidently, there's some sort of thrill in that, you know?
I guess so. But getting back to the movie at hand, I mean, this is not the first movie that had elements of spirituality in it that Nicolas Cage has been in. So, you know, it may just be something that's near and dear to him that he wants to do with these parts all the time.
Right. So maybe, Mr. Cage, we should expect our phone call soon. All right, with that, we're going to take our normal break, and when we come back, we will be talking with a fascinating guest, Dan Sturges. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
Pleasure to announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Baischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science, while also broadening their focus to include questions about what our bodies, minds, and spirits are capable of and how that information can best serve all living things. In addition to this cutting-edge research reviewed by an experienced and diverse scientific advisory board, Winbridge also certifies and trains research mediums and publishes the free, online, peer-reviewed Journal of Mind-Body States. please go to www.winbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute and how you can become a member of Winbridge, and for a list of certified mediums and opportunities to support specific research. That's www.winbridge.org.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Has your marketing pitch been missing the strike zone? Maybe you need a new player to help your marketing efforts. At LNRProductions.com, you'll find a team that can give your broadcast advertising the winning edge. LNR Productions has produced award-winning jingles, radio and television commercials for many businesses just like yours. Radio and television advertising work, but you need the right game plan. Make sure you're getting the most out of your ad every time it airs. www.lndrproductions.com. We'll throw strikes for your business every time.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to Signs of Life Radio, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation. Our number, if you'd like to talk to us or our guest, is 1-877-230-3062. Tonight's show is sponsored by Comlock Center, Comlock, K-M-L-A-K.com. Our featured guest of the evening is Dan Sturgis. Now, Dan's an accomplished actor. You've probably seen his smiling face in popular TV shows such as Law and Order and many commercials, theater, probably independent films, various news and talk shows, but that's not why he's here tonight.
No?
No. Dan's here because of his work as a paranormal investigator. He's had a childhood interest in ghosts, sparked by an interest in a Civil War history, and it led Dan to research haunted locations. He was asked to join Paranormal Investigations of New York City. He jumped right into that, he became an important member of the team. His knowledge of investigative techniques, equipment, and his knowledge of the theories behind hauntings made him a very popular consultant in the field. Dan founded the Historic Paranormal Research Group along with a colleague, Dan Tischer. It's a paranormal group that's made up of some of the best researchers on the East Coast. They specialize in historically haunted locations. And through Dan's hard work and persistence, he was able to arrange investigations in some of New York's most notoriously haunted locations, including the Merchant's House Museum, where he's conducting an investigation, which I believe is in the third year. Welcome, Dan. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you doing?
Okay.
Good. That was such a long introduction. I think the show's over.
Yeah, I know.
I know. You made me sound really impressive. I'm sure to disappoint now.
You know, I mentioned briefly, you know, you're currently, you know, an actor and you do so many things. You're an independent businessman. But basically, I'm always curious as to why people get into investigations of the paranormal. You know, why did you become interested in it?
Well, you know, I had always, when I was a little kid, I mean, we're talking, you know, 7, 8 years old when you have that kind of, when, you know, I was always into the UFOs, into the ghosts, and I was a big fan of the Loch Ness Monster, and got to go to Scotland and visit Loch Ness with my grandmother when I was very young. So I was always, had an interest in that kind of stuff. And then when I got a little bit older, I got involved in sports, and I kind of brushed this stuff under the rug, so to speak, and focused more on football and girls and the like. So I took a break from it for a really long time and moved to the city and started acting and working and got lucky and started making some money doing commercials. And I had always had an interest and a fascination with the Civil War as well. And as soon as I was able to afford it, I would go up and down the East Coast and visit various battlefields, Gettysburg and Antietam and Harper's Ferry and just all over the place. And every time you go to one of these little towns with the battlefields, they have a haunted bed and breakfast without fail. And haunted tours, you can take candlelight tours, once the sun goes down. So I would always stay in a haunted bed and breakfast, and I would always take one of the candlelight ghost tours, and it kind of reignited my interest in this stuff. And one night I was in Gettysburg, and I was staying at the Farnsworth House. And anybody familiar with investigating haunted locations has heard of the Farnsworth House. And I was staying in the Sarah Black Room, which is the most notoriously haunted room in this most notoriously haunted house in Gettysburg. So I was staying there and was excited and met a group of people who were doing a paranormal investigation in the Farnsworth House and got to pick their brain and thought that was, you know, a really cool way to spend the night and really interesting. And when I got back to New York City, I did a search and there were no paranormal groups in New York City. And I contacted a couple of the standbys in New Jersey, but it just, you know, location-wise, it just wasn't going to work out. And a couple weeks later, I did another Google search and looking for a paranormal group to join. And lo and behold, a paranormal group had popped up. And my friend Dom had started a group and met with him and we jumped right in and turned into a very busy group doing lots of investigations throughout the city.
Yeah, we keep referring to all these groups, you know, as paranormal groups, and you know that's a term that was coined quite a while ago,
right.
Because we think of these things as going against, you know, normal science, but in fact, paranormal might be the wrong word. You know, maybe this is normal instead of paranormal.
Yeah, I mean, people ask me all the time, and when we start discussing this, they ask, do I believe in the paranormal? And I say, you know what? I believe things just haven't been figured out yet. If you think back, you know, hundreds of years, lightning and thunder were paranormal until we figured out what they were. And could you imagine the first person that saw lightning was probably petrified. And until we really understood what was going on, it was, you know, the gods. It was, you know, the angels bowling was what my mom used to tell me when I was little. Because we don't understand it, we're afraid of it. And it becomes something that we think is supernatural when it's obviously just something that's normal. And I agree with you. I think these things that we're coming across when we do our investigations and we do our research and talk to people and interview people might certainly be things that are proven someday and become just normal, like thunder and lightning.
Yeah. Now, when we talk about, you know, investigations, I mean, there's certainly a lot going on at some of these sites, and I know it's somewhat of a concern because of just about every channel you turn on these days, cable stations, you know, there's some sort of a ghost hunting theme,
right,
or show, and it seems to me that there are a lot of people out there that are calling themselves, you know, paranormal investigators, you know, I think that is a concern. It's probably a concern to you as well, having done this for a while and seen some of the things that are out there. I mean, is there some sort of a certain standard that you think that somebody should have before they call themselves a paranormal investigator?
I think you'll run across a lot of people that call themselves paranormal investigators. You'll run across people that call themselves parapsychologists. And is there something? Yeah, there should be a, I don't even know if this is a word, a level-headedness and a paranormal investigator. I have met and plenty of people that call themselves paranormal investigators who will believe everything is paranormal, and they won't look on the other side of the coin. They won't look for a normal explanation. So it sort of does a disservice to the people who, I don't want to say are taking it more serious, but are more level-headed in their approach.
Right. So do you generally, let's say, you know, you get a phone call from somebody who is expressing some concerns or interest or curiosity about things that are going on in their home. Do you start off an investigation by giving them, an interview on the telephone?
I'll do an interview over the telephone and just talk to the person and see if, not to sound horrible, but to see if this person deserves an investigation. And I mean that with all the respect that it doesn't sound like I'm giving it. There are a lot of people out there that want to be haunted and want their house to be haunted, and will go to any length to convince somebody like me or some of my friends that are doing this that their house is haunted when, you know, odds are it's not. And I talked to a woman a couple of weeks ago who was describing things that were, if they were really happening, she had the most haunted studio apartment in the history of hauntings. And I told her, I said, look, you know, I'm not going to come down there until we talk. She wanted me to go out that night. And I said, you know, it sounds a little hard for me to believe. And if something is too good to be true, probably is. And she needed the kind of help that I am not equipped to do. And she was taking a lot of medications. And I didn't want to just completely blow her off. But I also didn't want to waste my time and then kind of feed into her obsession with wanting to be haunted. You know, all she needs is a paranormal investigator to go down there, and then it's just going to go through the roof.
Right.
So it's tough. So interviewing somebody over the phone and many times before I go out on an investigation and try and figure out the person and see if their story is consistent and try and talk to other members of the family. This woman wouldn't let me talk to anybody else in her family. Because they all thought she was crazy, so she didn't want me to talk to them. And those are just all red flags for me, where I'm like, well, you know what? I think my efforts are best laid somewhere else.
In that way, anyway, I think a most basic question that a lot of people who are listening tonight would have is spirits and ghosts. Is there a difference between the two?
Between a spirit and a ghost?
Right.
Well, it depends who you ask. Because there's the terminology is one of the things that's frustrating a lot of people that are doing this is one person's ghost is another person's apparition, which is another person's, you know, poltergeist activity. When we're talking about ghosts, it's a very general term. If we want to talk about the three kind of basic types of hauntings, let's talk about an apparitional haunting. Now, the ghost, the apparition that people are seeing is an intelligent haunting, it's also called. And this apparition can interact with you and the environment, and they're aware of you. So are you looking at a ghost? For lack of a better word, you're looking at a ghost. But then, you know, we'll come across a second type of haunting, which is called a residual type of haunting or a place memory or an imprinted haunting, which is what parapsychologists believe is like a recording. The environment or the location or the object has recorded events. Sometimes people say they're tragic events or high energy has been released, or it could be just a repetitive. People always talk about seeing the old lady walking up and down the stairs. Something that's happened many, many times can be recorded by this location or this object or the house. The house is nothing but a big object and can record this energy into the environment or the location. And then when conditions, atmospheric conditions or any other kind of conditions can trigger this release of energy, can everybody see this energy when it plays almost like a film loop? No, I think certain people are a little tuned in a little bit better than others, and they're able to experience this film loop. You can talk to the ghost. But it's not going to interact with you. It's not going to acknowledge you. you'll see the ghost walking down the hallway and through a wall. Well, the ghost isn't walking through a wall. You're watching a videotape or an audio recording. It could be noise or it could be smells. A lot of times it seems like it's almost on a schedule. But I guess technically, are you looking at ghosts in both situations, an intelligent apparitional haunting or a residual haunting? Okay, sure, you're looking at a ghost. I think the spirit, when you want to talk about a spirit, for me anyway, I believe that the spirit will, if I was talking about a spirit, I would be talking about the spirit of a person, the consciousness of a person, the personality of a person, which is what you get when you're looking at an apparitional haunting where they are going to interact with you and you're going to be dealing with the personality of that person. You're not dealing with their physical body, but their consciousness. So the differences between a spirit and a ghost, like I said, it really depends on who you talk to.
Right. So, Dan, it seems to me that, you know, the word haunting is you really misused. I mean, if the spirit entity is able to manifest either energy or some forces in such a way to make themselves appear, it may be, you know, to say hello or to visit a loved one, but yet we categorize it as an apparitional haunting. It doesn't, you know, seems to be the wrong terminology. Not everything is a haunting in the sense that it's sinister. I mean, there could be...
Does a haunting have to be sinister? I don't think... I am in the school of I don't buy into the whole demon thing. I don't buy into the evil spirits. I think if somebody was, you know, a moron when they were alive and they passed and for whatever reason their consciousness or their personality sticks around, if you run into that apparition, pretty good chance it's going to be a moron. It's going to be the same personality as they were when they were alive.
Right.
So I don't think there's anything sinister.
I think it's just semantics then. I mean, to me, you know, haunting, haunting means has the connotation of being something evil.
Scary.
So, sure. You know. So I mean, I would prefer we just called it visits, you know.
Visits and you know, we were talking, you said something before about an apparition manifesting. I don't know where you know, that now you're getting into a whole school of thought a lot of parapsychologists like Lloyd, our friend, mutual friend Lloyd Auerbach, is a big believer in this, and I happen to agree with him that a spirit isn't manifesting so suddenly that you can see them. A spirit doesn't have a body, it doesn't have a voice box, doesn't have a tongue to create sound waves, doesn't have a body to reflect light so that we can see it when we're looking at an object. We're looking at the reflection of that object. Now, if we're talking about a consciousness or a spirit that has no mass, how is it going to reflect light? I think that these spirits, everybody's got, and I think everybody will agree, everybody's got a little bit of psychic ability. Some people have more, some people have less. I think that these spirits, these consciousness or the personalities are communicating with us telepathically, because that's the only thing that they have is their mind, and they're communicating to us through ESP or you know, whatever term you'd like to use, but it's going to be a mind interaction, and they're projecting what they want you to see. There have been cases, Lloyd Auerbach is a great case, where a little boy was seeing an apparition of an older woman, but she would come to him sometimes as a young girl. It was whatever mood this particular, let's call her a spirit, was in that day. She would appear to the boy as a young girl, a teenager, you know, a young woman, or an older lady. It's whatever she chose to be seen as. So I don't think they're coming to us in bodies. I don't think they're creating their bodies back. I think they're projecting what they feel like being that day into our minds, which is pretty far out. But when I do lectures, I ask everybody in attendance, I say, hey, you know, I live in New York City, so the subway is always a great place to talk about it. I say, hey, anybody on the subway, have you known when somebody is staring at you? And everybody raises their hand. Everybody knows when somebody's being stared at. And what is that but some kind of connection, not using any of your known senses? So I think that these spirits, if the consciousness, and I believe it does, sticks around after bodily death, are communicating to us telepathically.
Yeah.
Which sounds crazy, I know, but.
No, it doesn't. I mean, I think that I would agree with you. I think, you know, I think mediumship, you know, is telepathy, you know, just that one of the parties, you know, no longer has a body. Mm-hmm. But I also subscribe to the theory of a spirit being of thought, you know, being able to make some sort of an imprint onto your mind, and then your brain takes over and puts that into action, you know, by distributing it through some of your senses. But you mentioned before, I wanted to go back a little bit. You mentioned about some ghosts being interactive. What would be some ways that a ghost would be interactive?
Well, when you're talking about this stuff, you really kind of have to throw the rule book out, and anything's up for grabs. I have never seen a ghost. I'll just say that right now. I've never seen a ghost. I don't know a lot of people who have, and I know lots of people who have perceived ghosts or felt the presence, and I have felt that. But a great example is I was very, very, growing up, I was very close with my grandmother. She lived with us, growing up, and she passed away. And, a few years after that, I had just had a big back surgery. I was laying in my little apartment on 46th Street, and I'd fallen asleep on the couch, and I was definitely asleep. But my grandmother, I dreamt this. My grandmother walked into the room, said, "Danny, don't be afraid." She sat down on a chair and gave me a pep talk. I was feeling really down at the time. And when she was done, she got up and she walked out through the kitchen, and I woke up looking in the kitchen, you know, facing the kitchen, leaning up on the couch. So I like to believe that my grandmother visited me and she gave me some information and some great advice, but she came to me in a dream. I don't think ghosts or spirits need to do this kind of grand Hollywood entrance. They can come to you and communicate you as simply through a dream. Other ways they can communicate is through, everybody's, you know, big on EVP. We get lots and lots of EVP communication. Our friend Garrett Husveth from Haunted New Jersey and Gordon Ward from Haunted New Jersey, they get an enormous amount of EVP in a lot of places that they investigate. EVP, electronic voice phenomena, which is recordings of disembodied voices, voices that aren't heard at the time of the recording, but they're heard later on upon playback. I just got one a couple weeks ago at the Merchant's House telling me to leave the room for asking an inappropriate question. And fascinating stuff. Pictures and video, they're hard to come across, but I've seen some video that's just amazing. So I think that they can communicate in whatever way the receiver is comfortable with or more tuned into. Some people might be better at being EVP magnets. I am EVP repellent. I never get them. I let other people hold my recorders while I'm doing an investigation, and that's how I get my EVP.
Right. Well, you know, that's an interesting thought, too, because in many experiments and research that's done in parapsychology, there's the experimenter effect. And you found that in many types of experiments, if the experimenter does not believe or has some sort of disdain or comes into the procedure expecting it not to work, that many times can affect the result.
Sure.
I would imagine hold true in ghost hunting. If you are convinced that ghost and spirit does not exist, then you probably are not going to pick it up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty skeptical. I mean, I do this stuff all the time, and I've spent countless hours and enormous amount of money doing this stuff. So I get a little offended when I'm out on these investigations that these spirits might think I'm a little bit too much of a skeptic to approach. You know, what are you going
to
do?
It's important to be skeptical and an open-minded skeptic is, I think, a prerequisite in your type of work. You
sure.
know, back in the, 100 years ago, there was such a huge amount of, first of all, there were literally, thousands of mediums.
Right.
And they would all, at that time, there were communication done through things like rapping and table tilting.
Table tipping.
And Ouija boards. And I remember, I don't know, they've been around certainly for a lot longer than I have, but I remember as a child, you know, playing, you know, with a Ouija board. And I was always wondering, you know, whether or not we were moving, you know, that planchette, you know, here and
right.
there. But do you, you know, I've also heard, you know, every time I talk about a Ouija board, purely in a sense of curiosity, people say, don't do that, you know, it's evil, and you're going to attract evil spirits. I mean, I'm sure, have you heard that?
Yeah. I hear it all the time, and I'm the jerk at the conventions that always asks the question when somebody's talking about Ouija boards. I'll raise my hand and I'll say, hey, listen, you know, where in the manufacturing process does Parker Brothers make it magic? It's, you know, it's press board and it's a planchette. The planchette moves around. There's something called the ideomotor effect, which is subconsciously we're moving these things the way we want them to move or the way our subconscious wants them to move. I tell people I'll get a Ouija board tattooed on my back and you can run a planchette on my back in the scariest haunted place. I don't, you know, people say, well, you're making communications and evil spirits are going to come through because you're trying to communicate and you're opening the door and wah, 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 wah. But what's the difference between that and an EVP session? You know, you're inviting spirits to come talk to your digital recorder, but somehow you throw a Ouija board in the mix and it becomes evil spirits.
Yeah, I would imagine spirit is always looking for, you know, some conduit to get through. As you say, it could be EVP, it could be mediumship, it could be dreams, it could be Ouija boards, it could be table tilting, you know, wherever. You know, I don't think if you believe in spirit, I don't think that it's an easy thing, and it's probably something that's very difficult and a learned trade on the other side. So, but
a learned trade on this side.
Yeah, yeah.
Open. We have this shoved down our throats that this stuff is crazy to even. I have friends. I mean, I was an in the closet paranormal investigator for years until, you know, I had my face in the paper and my buddies at the gym just goofed on me endlessly because it's shoved down our throats that this is all just hogwash. But it's not. It's a science that needs to be funded. The people that, I mean, there are scientists, there are just top-of-the-line scientists that are doing this kind of research that you'll never know, you'll never hear about, because they don't want to lose any kind of funding for other, quote-unquote, normal research that they're doing. As soon as somebody who's funding their research project hears that they go out and look for ghosts on the weekend, that's going to dry up, so they can't say anything, and that's, I think that's terrible, and
well, it is, you know, and there are a lot of very well, as you mentioned, well-credentialed scientists, many of whom are on our board,
right.
It's always a constant challenge. I mean, one of the areas now that's gaining more interest is near-death experiences, but still there's no real, you know, funding for it, and it's very difficult for the scientists to continue the research, as you say, doing it on the side or doing it on a shoestring.
Right. And the whole ghost hunting stuff, it's all under the umbrella of parapsychology. Parapsychology is the study of consciousness in the mind, of mind-mind interaction, like ESP, telepathy, or mind-matter, MMI, mind-matter interaction, mind over matter. Can we move things at will or unknown, you know, by accident, moving things, poltergeist activity deals with that, and then survival of the mind after bodily death, which is, you know, the ghost stuff, which is the sexy end of parapsychology. But it all falls under the parapsychology umbrella, which is a legitimate science that people are researching now. The Rhine Research Institute down in North Carolina is doing amazing research, and the results that people are getting are all over the world are. It would just blow your mind, but nobody takes it serious.
Well, I think the government does, but they keep it a secret.
Pardon me?
I think the government does, but they keep it a secret. They want to use it for their own.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's out there that they were doing remote viewing experiments. Russia was big on remote viewing experiments up until the late 90s.
Right. Well, even now, our government seems to be admitting admitting on some level that Russia and the other countries have far surpassed us on what they can do
right.
with their understanding of what's so-called paranormal.
Well, I was at a conference about a year and a half ago, and I was talking to a guy who had given a great presentation, and he had a government-issued sniper manual. And one of the things not to do for the sniper, one of the do not do this, is stare at your target for longer than a minute because he'll know he's being stared at. there you go. There's your proof right there.
You know, I always found it odd. As you know, I mean, many people that we come in contact with are bereaved in some sort, having lost loved ones. And
right.
when you're talking to them, you know, they'll tell you that, you know, they would give anything, you know, to see their loved ones again. Mm-hmm. And then, but in the same breath, they'll say, but if I did, I'd be freaked out.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I mean, there's, I think that the second part of that comes from, you know, what they see.
I think back to Hollywood again.
But then again, if somebody is fortunate enough to see a loved one, see an apparition, you know, of a loved one.
Right.
They're not going to call a ghost, paranormal investigator. Chances are they're going to, you know, just count that as a blessing, you know.
Exactly what they should do. It's nothing.
Right.
I tell people, and you know, there are all the horror stories out there, and there are all the people talk about the entity. I honestly haven't come across anybody who's been hurt, or been attacked or anything like that. But you always hear about it, but it's never happened to the person, you know, that you're talking to. Am I saying that it's never happened? No, absolutely not. But I think we might misinterpret a lot of things. People say, you know, I got pushed down the stairs. How do we know that this spirit wasn't just trying to get somebody's attention and tapped them on the shoulder and it freaked the person out and they fell down the stairs? But because we don't understand it, or it's something that was unexpected or unexplained, and they got hurt or scared, it becomes evil and malicious when who knows, maybe it wasn't. It's all a matter of perception, and different cultures have different thoughts behind all this stuff. And in America, it seems to be, I think, looked down upon more than anywhere else. I mean, in England, it's a fairly open. I mean, you can get a degree in parapsychology in England. You can't do that in America anymore.
No.
From an accredited college, you can go and get on the internet and to a diploma mill and have a master's degree, you know, in 15, 20 minutes with a credit card, and from a college that you don't need any kind of requirements to get in other than an internet connection.
You can get PhDs like that today in a lot of fields.
You can get a $1,500 on the internet. I forgot the name of the school, but you can get a PhD. No disability. Yeah. And, you know, you don't need SAT scores. You don't need anything to get in. You just need an internet connection.
Right.
And a check.
Right.
Yeah, so somebody will get a PhD. They will self-publish a book, put PhD at the, you know, with their name, and suddenly they're a published author and a PhD in a field, and they're going to have all kinds of wrong information that's just their theory, because all this stuff is just theory, and they're gonna mislead a lot of people. It's scary.
Now, Dan, you're doing you have been doing for a number of years now an ongoing investigation at the Merchant's House Museum.
Right.
What kind of equipment do you go in there with when you're looking for paranormal activity? And you go in with meters and.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tell you what, when I first started doing this, I had every piece of equipment you could imagine. I had 10 bags of stuff I would drag with me. Now I've got two cases I bring with me. I bring a camera, a video camera. Two EMF meters, electromagnetic field meters, one to pick up AC electromagnetic fields, one to pick up DC electromagnetic fields, AC being man-made, DC being natural EMF. I use the AC EMF meter just to kind of rule out any kind of paranormal activity. People who can be hypersensitive to electromagnetic fields,
And this has been recreated in the lab. Dr. Michael Persinger up in Canada has been doing research on the brain and electromagnetic fields, where he's reproduced hauntings and alien abductions and religious experiences in the laboratory, where people have smelled things, have seen apparitions, have seen UFOs and aliens, and felt like they were floating out a window just by manipulating the electromagnetic field on a particular part of the subject's brain. I bring also a natural electromagnetic field meter, which will only pick up a change in the natural electromagnetic field. Now, anything, we all give off a magnetic field. What this meter does it'll measure the electromagnetic field in an area, and if there's any kind of fluctuations in that field, any kind of changes, it'll register and it'll give off a signal.
Right.
So what I'll do is I'll set that up in a room and I'll put a recorder next to it, move away from it, and ask questions, and hopefully we'll get a response on the EMF meter. Now, these things are expensive, and I had one for about 3 years before it did anything. I thought I had wasted my money, but it was at the merchant's house, oddly enough, where it was for the first time it went off. And does that mean that area where the electromagnetic field meter went off, does that mean that there was a ghost there? Absolutely not. It means the electromagnetic field changed. But
right.
It was also in a room that people have the most experiences. It's also right next to an area where people have seen apparitions, right next to an area we got an amazing photo of an image in a mirror. So all these little things I check off on my little paranormal investigator checklist points to the direction that, okay, there might be some paranormal activity going on.
Right.
In the room.
Dan, I've been...
A lot of digital recorders just to record for EVP and now I'm starting to bring along with me a psychic, a great psychic, and who's a pretty amazing guy and become a good friend and into doing these investigations, and he's just invaluable on an investigation.
Well, that would certainly make sense. I've been a little negligent. We had a couple of callers that have been holding on patiently. Yep. You mind taking a call?
That would be great.
Okay.
First call is from Melissa. She has a question for Dan.
Okay.
Hi, Melissa.
Hello, Bob. Hello, Fran.
Hey,
hello, Dan.
How are you?
I'm hoping Dan is planning an amateur's investigation tour that we can all go on. Is that possible?
I have talked with the people at the merchant's house. If I was going to do that, it would be at the merchant's house, and they're open to that. I'm trying. If that ever happens, I'll post it on my website, and you can contact me through that.
And that website is Sturgis, Sturges, paranormal.com. I'll give it again at the end of the show.
Thanks, Bob.
Well, thank you, Melissa.
Sign me up.
Okay.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. We have another caller. We have...
We have Janet on the line.
Janet?
Yes.
You're on with Dan Sturges.
Hi, Dan. Janet. Hi, Fran and Bob.
Hello, Janet.
Hi. I have a question for you.
Wonderful mediums. I just have to say something. This is Janet Mayer from St. Louis.
How do you know that?
I know, because I know.
Wow.
You're a very good friend.
I'm psychic.
Well, I have a question for Dan. Something he said at the beginning made me question. What my question is you had mentioned something about when you people see ghosts, you think it's them projecting an image, and that's causing them to see something. Is that what you were saying?
No, I mean that the spirit is projecting their own self-image on in the receiver's mind. Pardon me?
But they can see them, correct.
Well,
I feel that
their mind's eye, let's say that.
Okay, because that's where I disagree with you. Because I really think people can see them, because I have seen people, and it's
right.
Not in my mind's eye. It's because they've actually shown me things, more or less, to even say, you know, we had something being stolen, and they came and appeared. A person I've never known before, never saw her again, you know, don't know this person. She appeared to me, told me to, you know, point out the window to see something. Of course, I was so shocked I saw her, I wasn't paying attention to what she wanted me to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the time, I thought, wow, that's really strange, but she was there. She was there. It wasn't like it was just an image in my mind. And when you said, well, you've never seen ghosts, I mean, and I feel like, in my opinion, I have to answer that as saying, well, if you haven't seen them, that you may not believe in it. But if you see it, you have to believe in it because it exists.
Right. I mean, my only question, and you know, I had this conversation with my friend Richard Troller, who's a psychic, and he said the exact same thing you did. And we weren't arguing, and you know, I'm not claiming to be right.
I am claiming I've seen them, but I mean, I had to give my opinion because I'm like, no, and I'm not arguing. I just had to put in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I don't think I don't argue ever, but Richard just did say, I said, Richard, if a spirit doesn't have any mass, what's the light reflecting off of for your eyes to see? And he said, well, maybe it's reflecting off of something at a different frequency that I can see and you can't. And I said, well, you know what? That very well could be. You know,
that's very possible. And
yeah, sure,
if it helps, at times when I see them, they come through as colors, like coming out of their solar plexus.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wondered about that. Like, you know, and I would think, why am I seeing these colors sometimes? And that could be part
you know,
of it. Maybe it is something with
that. My friend Gordon Ward has a book out, and one of the things that he wrote, which is great, talking about psychic abilities. He said, look, everybody's got psychic abilities. Some people are a little bit better at it. And just like everybody can run, everybody can sprint, but not everybody's going to win the gold medal in the Olympics.
Right.
Some people just have more of the ability, and I think when you're dealing with people like yourself, that's what they have. And for us slow runners, slow psychics, if we're not experiencing this, it's hard for us to kind of wrap our head around it. So I just try to go to my level-headed place and say, you know, how are people seeing things if they don't have a mass to reflect light? And
right.
And the easiest thing for my head to wrap around is they're being almost told what to see, and we're seeing what the spirit wants us to see. Well,
right.
they're giving
sure.
us information
and
our brain
you.
Processes it, and that's what we see.
Thanks for calling, Janet.
Okay,
Janet.
And thank you. I love his no-nonsense attitude. It's wonderful. You guys have a great evening.
You too.
Thank you.
Okay.
I just want to agree with Janet because I, too, have seen spirit, and I'm not a medium or a psychic.
Right. But we don't know, and that's one of the things that we were in search for.
And I'm going to go back to the same thing. We have to throw out the set of scientific theories that we were taught from kindergarten.
Yeah, no rules. You've got to throw the rule book out.
And
everything's up for interpretation, and, you know, who knows? It could be everybody could be correct,
right?
Or we could all be wrong.
Yeah. Well, I hope we find
that be a drag, but
now for more information, I know that Dan set up this website recently, and it's growing. So keep checking in. It's Sturgis, Sturges, SturgisParanormal.com. And I know that Dan has also set up a series of lectures with some of the people that he's made reference to tonight. And what are they going to be, the last Sundays of the each
month?
It's going
to be the last Sunday of every month so far. We've got one scheduled for this coming Sunday with Garrett Husbeth. And then April 26th is going to be Gordon Ward. And May 31st is going to be Al Rauber. And then June, I'm keeping my fingers crossed for Lloyd. He's got to check his schedule and get back to me.
Well,
and then in
great.
July will be my buddy Don Villela is going to do a lecture to July 26th.
Okay, so keep checking SturgisParanormal.com, and you'll be able to check on those, not only on those lectures, but on some other activities and hauntings and investigations that are going on. Dan, thank you so much for being with us tonight, and I hope to visit again soon, and we look forward to speaking with you.
Same here. Thanks so much, guys, and everybody out there listening. Thanks for putting up with me.
Thank you.
Good night, Dan. Thanks.
All right. Good night, guys. Good night, friend.
And that just wraps it up for us tonight, and just a reminder that our loved ones are only a heartbeat away, and science is going to prove it.